in the worst situations, if you're with your mate, you're still going to find things funny. And that's what I was hoping that me and Johnny could translate into R1 as well. We'd already been out to Greece and done swimming pool scenes, and Johnny had said, "Oh, Tony, I think I'm going to wear a top," to basically make me feel more confident. We got there, he took his top off, had abs. Someone put a vest on this man. This is ridiculous now.
I'm in my head seeing the edit and saying, that clip goes here, that one goes there, don't need that bit. When I think, okay, yeah, this one's perfect, that's when Tony will improv and I'll go, well, I've been that then, that's done. Ruin.
Our exec producer Murray, he just turned around and went, "Oh yeah, I brought this wig with me." Don't know why he targeted me with the wig though. But annoyingly, I did come out wearing the wig, looked in the mirror and thought, that does actually look quite good. Quickly on the phone to a man in Turkey, see what we can fix.
Film is definitely harder to get into without some kind of financial backing.
There is a big stigma against working class actors. From my generation coming up, I had it. So you think, if I'm getting it now, how bad would someone like Gary Oldman, if they would have had it so much worse, but they just kept going on?
Hey everyone, I'm Billy and welcome back to Half the Picture. Today we have our third guest duo for you, director Zach Fenning and actor Tony Cook, the guys behind the new British crime thriller A Gangster's Life. A Gangster's Life is a really interesting movie, a quirky indie take on the classic British gangster flick. Imagine Sexy Beast as an offbeat buddy comedy. It's funny, twisty and bloody, and it was great fun chatting to Zach and Tony about it. By the way, remember to like and subscribe to the podcast as it really helps us get more amazing guests on the show. So, without further ado, let's roll on my conversation with Zach Fenning and Tony Cook. Enjoy. Hey guys, welcome to Half the Picture. How are you both doing?
Really good, thank you. How are you doing, Billy?
I'm doing very well. As I said before we start recording, I've seen Gangster's Life, your new movie. I really enjoyed it. And for a kickoff, my first question I wanted to ask was, so Tony, you're the star, Zach, you're the director, and the movie feels like quite a sort of labour of love for the pair of you. I mean, you both produced it. I guess I wanted to ask, like, how personal is the movie to the pair of you as say, the star and the director?
I think for both of us, it was quite personal and a big thing because it was our first movie together. So it was a lot of time and effort going into it, not just on screen, but everything that happens off screen. I think we were joined at the hip for 2 years and still are. I can't get rid of him. I remember shooting one of the last scenes in the film, not wanting it to end. And I just kept looking at Tony going, have one more take.
Are you saying you didn't want to get rid of me? Is that what you're saying?
No, generally no.
Good, because this is being recorded. This is evidence now. I can keep this.
Yeah. So it's kind of like Elijah Wood at the end, his last day at the end of Lord of the Rings. Peter Jackson just didn't want him. Didn't want to say, check the gate. Let's just keep it going. Don't want him to leave. Same kind of vibe.
Exactly that. Yeah, you have so much fun on set and with each other that you do not want to stop. And that's why we're always looking at doing the next one.
And for you, Tony, was it the same kind of thing?
I couldn't wait for it to end. it was amazing because going from obviously the idea and then quickly going, all right, we're going to make something happen, just keeping that momentum. And we were 100% just glued at the hip. As you said, we still are now, but not literally. We are in different rooms at the minute.
Well, the movie, I mean, watching it back, it's interesting because the movie is such a mix of tones. You know, the opening scene, you know, when you start watching it, you kind of feel like this is going in the direction of your classic sort of gritty British gangster film. You know, you think of films by Guy Ritchie and Sexy Beast. There's a lot of sort of violence and, you know, you have the sort of the East End kind of language and dialect in there, you know. So you feel like the movie is one thing. And then actually, as you watch it, something that surprised me about the movie is that it sort of diverts into these different sort of tonal registers. So you've got this sort of interesting sort of, as I say, classic sort of British East End gritty crime sort of material in there, but then you also have this sort of quite quirky sort of buddy comedy element to it as well. But this stuff between you, Tony, and Johnny, you know, well, and your co-star is great, and like there's a lot of humor in the film. And I guess I just wanted to ask, like, was that a conscious thing on the part of both of you? I guess particularly for you, Zach, did you want to create a sort of British crime movie that was a little bit different from the stuff we normally get, that kind of Guy Ritchie sort of style?
Yeah, I think a lot of the gangster and gangster comedy movies tend to fall into those categories of they're quite violent, but the comedy moments are big as well. But they're always interchanged with the two. And for us, I think it was trying to find the right balance. Where do we fit in with the how much comedy do we want? How much of the gang violence do we want? And I think we were leaning more towards the comedy side, which was great for us, but there's still enough gangster in there that people can enjoy that side of the film and that genre. Yeah, it's interesting finding your own tonal shifts with it. It does go back and forth between the two. And I just love the comedy that was coming out of Johnny and Tony, and they worked so well together, just as a duo. And luckily, it's not the first time they've been a duo on screen together.
Well, I was going to ask you, too, because like, was it quite hard for you to play that? Was that a challenge? Because as you say, you know, it's such a mix of registers. Like you said, the crime stuff is quite, there is humor in there, but it's also, it's serious when it needs to be, you know, it's violent when it needs to be. And then you sort of, you can pivot from that to quite lighthearted, as I say, kind of quirky buddy comedy. I mean, like, was that a bit of a challenge ever on set, sort of performing those two registers and the others as well?
I think it was quite lucky, really, because Zach had very much set out where he wants the tones in different bits. Like the end dinner scene was very clear. Don't you dare improv tone. Do not try to make any jokes. This is an emotional scene. But now having that clear layout for us was great. Because there's also takes when Zach would turn around to me and Johnny and go, all right, this one's for you two. Do what you want. Get through the dialogue and then let's run through. So it became a playground. And having Johnny that I've worked with before doing a comedy road trip movie, we know we can improv. The only problem is we always try to make the other one laugh, because that does become a problem. It's like this scene we sat with Bradley, who plays Clarky, and he's given us instructions. It's after the Ed walks past holding the box of wine. Johnny puts his finger up. You see it in the outtakes where Johnny puts his finger up so close to my face, and I'm trying to be serious, and I was gone. There was quite a few takes that I was like, well, that's going to be done for this take, guys. It's been lovely seeing you all.
I love that, though. It would add so much to it, because the fact they know each other and they've worked together and they do try and genuinely set each other off, it added that extra dimension to the characters as well. And it just plays out well in the edit.
I was going to ask about that specifically, because the energy, the chemistry between you, Tony, and Johnny is so kind of there's electricity to it, you know, and it kind of forms the beating heart of the movie in a lot of ways. Like that friendship kind of forms the heart in a lot of ways. You mentioned there, like, you know, you guys we would improvise on set. I did want to ask about sort of instances of improv. I mean, you mentioned there's that sort of wine scene, because that scene kind of plays out in that sort of medium wide shot, you know, and then the character comes in the back and he's carrying the box of wine. I mean, like, yeah, comedy always plays better kind of like, you know, in those sort of wider shots with like where you can see all the different players sort of in the shot. Like when you came to shooting the comedy, was it always kind of like that? Like, you know, okay, we're going to keep this in a wide, are we going to go in for a close up? Or like, how did you guys shoot an interplay on the comedy?
I agree with you. I think comedy works so much better on the wide when you can see everything, and you just leave the awkwardness sitting there on the middle of the screen with nowhere to go. We did consider on set getting the reverse angle of Johnny and Tony, but I didn't feel like it made sense. I'm not much of a director for coverage. I like shooting what I want, which does leave me in a tricky spot sometimes when I've missed something. I think it's more intentional keeping it that way and just letting the comedy play out. Even with their backs turned, Tony and Johnny are still being funny, and it's the turn back that gives that next step of the laugh. So it works better on the wide.
And I think you even see that in there's that scene where the kind of lineup scene outside, where the gangster explains to you guys like the chipper or whatever, the chipper whole thing, and there's a wide, it's the lineup and you all arrayed against the shot, and it plays so well in that wide shot. The comedy of the back and forth, it works really well.
I think some of that it reminds me of like Playtime by Jacques Tati or Amelie as well, where you've got those weird funny moments on the wide and everything's just so kind of unnatural and these people have to try and fit in some way, that physical comedy comes into play, and you can't get physical comedy on a close-up. It just feels off. So it was nice to be able to actually just sit back and let the wide play.
And then for you, Tony, and I guess actually this is both for you, but I guess specifically for you, Tony, like what were those scenes that you had particular fun with where Zach was just like, right, okay, you know, Johnny, you guys can just go off and, you know, you can sort of do what more or less what you want and then come back, I guess, into sort of the meat of the scene, but you guys can go off and improvise. Like what were the kind of scenes that stuck out in your mind for that were really good for that?
The sheep farming scene. That was quite a big one, because literally before we were doing the scene, we had another location lined up. We can go there. And the guy who owned the villa at Vidiria Estates, he said, well, the guy next door, he's got sheep. We could just do it in my olive grove. She went, okay. And the guy who was playing the sheep farmer, Yorgos, he's actually a sheep farmer. So he turned up with the knives and everything. We weren't planning on chopping any up and no animals were harmed. But he just walked over and grabbed one, got in a headlock and just walked off. And the minute me and Johnny saw that, we thought, oh, we're going to play with this. It was just such a strange moment watching a man get a sheep in a headlock and just start walking towards you. You go, yeah, this has got comedy legs. We're going.
It was professional sheep herding, just to say no animals were harmed.
He wasn't pretending to be one as an actual moment. I'm going method. I'm going Daniel Day-Lewis on this sheep.
There's words you don't hear every day or say every day. I mean, with a scene like that, I mean, like, how long does that then for, like, if you're playing around with it, like, how much time do you give it then, like, to breathe? I mean, like, we just, okay, well, let's just set aside some time for this, let's just have fun. Or is it quite a sort of, like, you know, that we've got to focus on, like, what was the kind of vibe, I guess, for that?
I think over the course of the film in general, we were actually pretty good with time. We finished every single day early except for one. We always had time. We were trying not to, you know, overplay what we had, but it meant that we had time at the end of a scene or at the end of a particular shot. Someone would think of something, go, oh, wouldn't it be funny if... It's like, well, we've got time, let's do it, let's just try it. And I kind of like that as well for the crew. So I've come from that background, and I really hate having those super long days where when you're the crew member, you're there 2-3 hours before everyone else, and then you leave after you've packed up, and by the time you get home, you're dead and you've got to wake up again. So it was nice having those more controlled days where we could finish early and look after cast and crew a bit better.
I mean, speaking of crew roles, I mean, because you, Zach, I mean, you're the director, but also you serve as the DP on the film, the cameraman. I mean, what was it like being, I guess, shooting the movie as well as the head honcho, the director? What was that like?
It was tricky. So it's my first time actually directing. I've been DOP before, and I've directed smaller projects, but I wouldn't really class that as directing. It's more like I'm there giving helping hands. So this time I actually got to properly talk to the actors, and that's tricky when you're also doing the technical other side of it. And my first AC, Ashley Antine, he was so helpful with that. He was handling so much of the, like, moving equipment and setting up the camera, and I would just go like, well, a bit lower, a bit round, right there. That's good, cool, let's sort lights. And then it gave me time to talk to actors, but I kind of wish I had more. So I think that's a lesson for me for next time, is just balance the time a little bit better. I'd love to be able to give more to the actors next time.
I hear a lot of directing, it is a huge part of it is time management, isn't it? Because you've got so many HODs and so much stuff, machinery around you to balance. You know, it's a lot. As you say, it's, you know, making a low budget film, you know, it is challenging. I mean, what was the most, I guess, like, it's sort of a double barrel question for both of you, but like, what was sort of the most challenging day on set that you remember? And also, I guess, on the opposite, like, what was the most fun day that you guys both had? Like, the hardest day and also the funnest day?
Go on, Zach, you go on.
Yeah, I think funnest day for me was when we shot the Macho Alante stuff, the fake TV show at the very end, after the end credits, because that was the crew just kind of messing about on camera, pretending to be actors for a bit. Hardest day, I don't think there's a day that stands out where things went, like, so badly wrong that we were bricking it or we'd lost it. I'm sure there are moments. Tony, can you think of any?
I think the hardest day was probably for me personally, it's a dinner table scene, because we're outside. It's just kind of keeping in that the emotional state for it for that long. But it was like the payoff on it. When I see that scene, it's one of my favorite scenes, because it just looks incredible. The performance of everyone, like Christina, who played Thea, the fear on her face, right? And the intensity from Yanis. It was just the perfect kind of scene for that. But no, the fun scene, definitely Macho Alante. The only problem with that is, now, when they put me in a wig for this, I didn't know there was going to be a wig. And our executive producer, Murray, he just turned around and went, oh yeah, I brought this wig with me. And for no reason. There was no explanation why he had a wig in his bag.
No.
I don't know if he's a fugitive, but it just seemed like a strange thing to go, yeah, Tim, you put this on. I don't know why he targeted me with the wig, though.
So the wig was the funnest day on set was was in the wig.
I think fun was a stretch. I was like, oh, brilliant. I'm going to... Gonna wear a wig, great. But annoyingly, I did come out wearing a wig and looked in the mirror and thought, that does actually look quite good. Quickly on the phone to a man in Turkey, see what we can fix.
You mentioned the dinner scene at the end there, that really sort of intense sort of payoff to the movie, which is at the end, you know, between, you know, the characters, they all get together and, like, yeah, and the violence erupts kind of at the end. And in relation to that scene specifically, I wanted to ask was about the influences that were sort of informing you as you were making the movie, I guess both as an actor, Tony, but also for you as the director, Zach, because in that scene I can see a bit, there's a little bit of Seven with, you know, the box. Elsewhere in the movie I kind of sensed a little bit of Sexy Beast, and as I say, that, you know, you harken back to that sort of Guy Ritchie sort of strand of British gangster, but with that comedy mixed in. I mean, what kind of films and filmmakers were influencing, and actors were influencing the two of you as you were making this film?
I think you're spot on with Sexy Beast. That's definitely one that came up a few times. Like, visually, I love that film because you've got those clear blue skies, the bright colours, they let the sun hit in a lot of shots. I think modern cinema now tends to be everything's heavily diffused all the time, and there's no sense of hardness, and I quite like that. Because even though Grease is the lovely, beautiful section of our film, it's actually the hardest for lighting. I think one of the other ones would be, I'm going to say this film name wrong, because I've never actually heard anyone say it before, and I can't remember how they say it in the film. Sicario?
Mm. Sicario, that's it.
Am I saying that right? Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah, I'll take that. Yes, I love the scene in that where the hitman approaches the like the mob boss near the end and takes him out. The lighting for that, I tried to replicate in some way for the dinner table scene at the end, which was really simple. It was just two lights. Just bang one off the umbrella and then one off the pole, and that's all we did. Going in with that, the technical approach, I like to keep things very simple and then keep the lights out the way of the actors so they can move around the space. Because what I found with this film and actors in general is that the actors will say to me, oh, the blocking is okay, but it's also rubbish. Let's do it my way. And the actors have better ideas. They know where they want to move. They know where they want to be. And as long as they're fulfilling like what needs to happen in the plot, it's good to be able to let them move. So the fact that we had the freedom to do that, it worked really well.
No, you know, that's that. The next one, I'm doing cartwheels around the table just for fun. I'm like, I feel my character would do this.
Yeah. Like for that. I mean, I was going to ask about the lighting in that scene, actually, because, and I think you get that, this in Sexy Beast and in this film, like the fact that when you're shooting in that kind of climate, like obviously the skies are really blue and the light is beautiful, but also the nights are really black. They're pitch black. Yeah. That sort of hard black up against the sort of golden sort of like lights coming from the house, the villa at the end. And it was really beautifully put together. I really admired what you guys did on that. It was, and obviously the way it was played and the way that, you know, the blocking of it with you, Tony, and Johnny and the others, it worked really well. So yeah, that was a particular scene I enjoyed.
It was a tricky one as well, because we were using a Sony F55, which is a great camera, but where the modern Venice cameras have much higher ISOs, it made it slightly tricky for the nighttime scenes because it really was dark and we had a very small a lighting kit. So next time I think I'd love to go with a lovely Sony Venice or Venice 2. If Sony's listening, please give me a Venice.
Yay, more for the Carno.
Well, I guess sometimes less is more, I guess, with lighting. You know, like I think about like Robbie Mueller or like you say, like Roger Deakins shot Sicario, and the way he lights things is so specific to him, but also like, you know, it feels like it looks how it really looks, you know, it isn't just totally stylized. And that's something that I liked with this film. It wasn't just gritty realism. There was a style to it, but also it looked naturalistic. It looked real. Yeah, which I appreciate.
That's definitely the aim for it, making it naturalistic. So I think you see so many films now, particularly from Netflix and the YouTube generation of cinematographers, where you'll just get like a really overly saturated, bright colour, boom, and then another one here, and everything looks a little bit weird and you wouldn't normally see it like that. So trying to strike that natural balance was pretty key for me. I wanted it to look like real life.
And you, for you, Tony, like what kind of sort of, I guess, actors, but also, I guess, filmmakers or films were influencing you when you were making this? Any particular sort of touch points for you?
Yeah, one of the main ones for me was Snatch, because the dynamic between Statham and Stephen Graham in that is just incredible. It is getting across in the worst situations. If you're with your mate, you're still going to find things funny. There's still going to be moments where you're like, this is horrific, but there is something funny about it. And that's what they captured so well. And that does hope in that me and Johnny could translate into R1 as well. That and the height difference between them is similar to me and Johnny. It's just any scene where me and Johnny were walking, he'd always try to find a little bit of a ledge to get one up. But it's like when we were doing the hanging, the torture scene, we'd already been out to Greece and done swimming pool scenes, and Johnny had said to me, oh, Tony, I think I'm going to wear a top during the swimming pool scenes to basically make me feel more confident I was going to be out there. Like, oh, okay, cool. We got there, he took his top off, had abs. I was like, someone put a vest on this man. This is ridiculous now. This can't happen. I've only got the height now.
The way you talk about like how you guys worked together, I mean, I know you said earlier that like you had worked together before this film. Is that right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, what is your sort of working relationship like with Johnny, like, I guess, on a day-to-day basis on set? It sounds like it's very close and it's very, like I say, that sort of comes off on screen. Is that what it's like?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's like. So we're halfway through filming American Road Trip movie. So we filmed the first half before, and then we've done A Gangster's Life. And I'm back with Johnny again in March to film more of that. Yeah, the working relationship is pretty much the same, where we're constantly trying to make each other laugh and just, it makes it a lot easier, because the minute you get on set, you're already mates anyway.
And how did you guys first meet, if you don't mind me asking? Did you first meet on set, or was it just like, were you friends before you started working?
Yeah, basically, I'd become aware of his Twitter. He started doing a lot of videos on Twitter. that went crazy because they were so funny. Follow an actor's life, that side bit. And then when I was doing the American Road, it went crazy. Mm. He's got a great story about how he met all the casting crew of Ted Lasso just off of the back of that. They recognized him in a pub in Richmond, which was insane. Yeah, I was doing the American Road Trip one. I'd signed on to that. And then they were auditioning Johnny for that. And then, I met Johnny on set and just hit it off straight away. And Zach was on that as DOP. We all kind of got to have that rapport build straight from the outset.
And then Zach, for you, like having to direct these two, is it ever challenging or is it always just...
Yeah, Zach.
Lucy, you say, what's that like?
Is it challenging, Zach?
No, it's not challenging. It's really lovely. I think it's always a challenge for me because I'm in my head seeing the edit and saying that clip goes here, that one goes there, don't need that bit. And then when I think, okay, yeah, this one's perfect. This one's going to go in this very specific little section that can only fit this exact bit. That's when Tony will improv and I'll go, well, I've been that then. That's done. Ruined. The challenge comes in post, in on-set phenomenon.
I mean, when it comes to like editing, you mentioned editing, like so you're a director who's very much, when you're on-set shooting, you're thinking, like, you know, you're thinking however many weeks or months ahead in the edit.
Yeah.
This will work here. I need this little bit of coverage or this here. Is that how you approach the sort of day-to-day shooting?
So everything's storyboarded anyway, so we have the rough sense of how it's going to be, but always when you're on set, there's usually something that throws you, or it could be that you see a shot that works better and can make the day more efficient at the same time. So stepping away from the storyboard a little bit is fine, but in my head, I'm still seeing, it's like I'm watching the film as we're going and I'm spotting blanks. And that's come slightly from being in this low-budget short film world beforehand, where I'd have the DOP and I'd sometimes be like every other crew member role at the same time. So advising the client, okay, we're kind of missing this shot or we might need that bit. I think everyone in that kind of realm ends up doing that, but it's useful to have that skill as a director because then I'm not reliant on saying, oh, my artistic vision wants this and I don't want that. No, you need that shot. Don't be stupid.
And I guess it's always helps with, like, you know, so it means there's less to reshoot. You don't have to go back and pick up as much because, you know, you've got what you need in the can already. I did want to ask about the locations of the movie, because a lot of it is, well, a bit of it is shot, I want to say, in Greenwich, in sort of Isle of Dogs and sort of like southeast. I lived there for years. That was my backyard. I mean, was there, like, how important, because a lot of these sort of, like I say, London set gangster movies, location is important because it kind of captures the spirit of the film, and they kind of, the films end up coming about where they are as much as, you know, who they're about. Was it purely down to circumstance? They were like, okay, we can get that location for that length of time, or was it like, no, we want to make a movie about this part of London, this kind of vibe, this kind of terrain?
Well, it was a bit of a mixture. So we had ideas in our head of what these places would look like, or our ideal version of it would look like, and then we'd have to see kind of the reality of a situation. And I think most of the times we got something that looked the way we wanted it to look. But where you mentioned Greenwich and other dogs, that was for the pickups on some of the external shots. So I literally just drove around with a camera and I'd stop places and be like, right, that's my external. I think we shot that back in December last year, maybe. But yeah, there's definitely intentions of the way things look, but obviously sometimes you say, maybe this isn't exactly how I want it, but it's 90% of the way there. And every location looked after us so well. Like, as soon as you mention that you're doing a film and it's kind of a fun one, everyone wants to get involved. So we had really good people and locations.
It's like when we're filming in the Bideri estate, the family that lived there.
Mm.
When we had one of the days where we had a little bit of downtime, many said, oh, you come to us and we'll cook for you. And they put on this massive spread for all the cast and crew to sit with them and eat. So we had the best location for what we wanted visually. Mm. Also just the people there. I was like, we couldn't have anywhere better.
That's something to hear, because I feel like the impression I get is that the further out from central London you go, the further out you go into, you know, the other sort of boroughs and neighbourhoods, the more sort of friendly and tolerant people are of shooting and filming in general. I feel like if you're shooting central, people just don't want to hear about it. They don't want to know. They'd rather you F off. But, you know.
Yeah, totally right. It's definitely easier. So we shot some Dartford, some in Essex up in Finchingfield. Where else did we shoot? We shot in the Baxhall.
Yeah, back in Hill 6. That's one of my favourite shots, is that one where you've got Binton, Clarkie, Stevie and Bradley standing outside the office building, and then it cuts to the other side and you see the big sign at the top where it looks like they're on a palm beach on this old battered office.
I couldn't believe that when I saw it on the recce. I was like, that is perfect. That is going in the script. Not a problem.
That was the set design. It was already there.
It was just there already. That wasn't the production design didn't have anything to do with that. It was just like, that's it.
That's there. Just perfect.
So a question that we ask all our guests on Half the Picture is, so, you know, we get a lot of filmmakers on, a lot of actors, people who are passionate about film, people who are film workers. And something that we ask, is there somebody, whether it be actor, filmmaker, you know, the editor, DP out there working in film today who you haven't worked with before and you'd love to work with the most? I mean, for the both of you, like, you know, is there anyone out there currently working who you haven't worked with before that you would love to work with?
If there's anyone, yeah. I mean, I'd just like... go and watch what Christopher Nolan does or Roger Deakins as well. I'd love to just sit and watch them, like, not do any work. I wouldn't do any work on those sets. I would just follow them around.
I think Michael Caine. I think I'd have to persuade him out of retirement, but yeah, that he's been just a idol for me for years. I've read every book about him, all the stories from when he's come up. He's always been one I was like, yes, if I could get on with him or Gary Oldman, either of those, I'd go for it.
So sort of classic London kind of working class thespians, like your Gary Oldman, Zemo. I mean, do you have like a specific favorite Michael Caine sort of film or performance or a Gary Oldman film that you particularly love?
Ooh,
that's a tough question. There's a lot of them, isn't
there? Yeah, Michael Caine, the Ipcress Files were incredible. There's just so many stories about him. Like when he was first coming up and he'd done his first big jobs and he was earning money, he went to buy a Rolls Royce and he went into a dealership and asked to buy it. And the guy in there said to him, I don't believe you've got the money, because they're just purely based on his accent. So he went next door, brought another Rolls Royce down the road and drove past with his middle finger out the window. That's more like it. Because there is a big stigma against working class actors. Like even from my generation coming up, I had it. I've turned up to things and been told you're too common to play this role. So you think if I'm getting it now, how bad would someone like him and Gary Oldman and so kind of pioneering and coming through? They would have had it so much worse, but they just kept going on.
Yeah, it makes you realize how important films like, yeah, actors like Gary Oldman and also Tim Roth and like Ray Winston and like Phil
Stephen
Daniels,
Graham.
Stephen Graham, all those guys. Like I think about films like, yeah, Quadrophenia or Scum or like Made in Britain. And then later on, the stuff Stephen Graham did, like obviously like This Is England and Snatch, you know. So is there still, do you think, a big stigma these? I mean, because I feel like people make more noise about it these days that we have to be more progressive with casting. But do you think there is still a bit of stigma about working class actors, working class, you know, film workers that is still sort of in there?
Yeah, it's still definitely in there. I think it is better than what they had to endure, 100%, because they did chop down a lot for us. But it's still there. I'll still turn up to auditions and not so much now, but at the beginning of the career, I'd get it more. But I think also now I'm kind of comfortable enough in myself to highlight if I've got a problem.
And how about you, Zach? I mean, have you experienced that in this movie? Because I guess with this movie, especially like you're making a movie about, you know, very working class characters. I mean, like, you know, was it a tricky movie to make in that regard? Did you get any sort of pushback on that at all? Or was that, you know, was there any difficulties relating that to this with the film?
I don't think I had those kind of difficulties for the movie. I think from a crew side, it's different from the actor side. Because film is, I suppose for both actually, actors and crew, it's hard to get into and stay into because the work is not as constant. So you kind of need to come from some sense of money or be okay being dirt poor for a while watching the work and building up. It's definitely harder to get into without some kind of financial backing, I think. That would be my take on it. I think there should be more grants and that for people rather than just, you know, it should be finance-based.
You think you can apply it to a lot of the arts, you know, film and, like, you know, other arts. You know, it is tricky. When you first get started, it's so hard. Unless you come from a well-off family background, it's really hard to find a footing, isn't it, financially? Because, you know, that is such an important part. You know, you have to live, haven't you? So it's a really crucial part of it. I guess, as a final question, what kinds of things can we expect from you both coming down the pipeline? Have you got any exciting projects that you're working on? Are you guys planning on maybe working together again? Like, you know, what kind of things can we expect from you guys?
Yeah.
Well, a loaded question.
No, it's a good question. One, we've got two or three projects we're looking at. So it'd be me, Tony, and our business partner, Murray Fisher. And we're looking to go a slightly different genre next, I think. I don't know how much I'm really allowed to say. It's Tony and Murray, my producers. So
if you see a little sniper hit your chest, you're up. Yeah, we recently went out filming at New Boyana Studios. Mm. They did Running Man, and they're doing the Father Joe role with Al Pacino. Got talking to the exec there through our other exec, Giles Alderson. And these guys, they produce, like him and his dad, they produce Rambo, Expendables, loads of films. So we started talking about the fact we've just done Gangster Life and we now want to do a bigger production. So yeah, we're going from doing indie film as Zach's debut to then a studio film for his second one. So we're going to film over there. We're going to do a horror. The script is in development at the moment. So it's a big leap up. It's very exciting.
Fantastic. I understand that you say, you know, you can't say too much about it, but you've piqued my interest. I mean, what kind of, can you say anything about like what kind of horror you're going to be sort of playing with? What kind of direction you're going to go in with that genre?
I think we'd probably strike a fun balance somewhere between terrifying and entertaining. So a lot of films at the moment, I think, go down the slightly weird route too much and they leave off a lot of the entertainment. I think we would strike a balance between the two there.
Okay, kind of like your sort of Sam Raimi, your classic Sam Raimi Evil Dead kind of like mix of horror and kind of fun, fast-paced comedy kind of vibe. Is that maybe too strong?
I think probably losing the comedy, more of like action entertainment than comedy entertainment in those ones. They're still going to be really scary.
Okay, great. Well, I was curious because like obviously there's the comedy in this, the kind of quirky comedy, whether like you'd carry that on. But it sounds fantastic. So kind of horror, thriller, action kind of vibe.
Yeah, I think so. And it's going to be tricky keeping everyone from jumping to comedy because I think everyone we've got has such a fun time on set. I need to keep everyone serious for the next one.
Fantastic. Well, I've had such a great time chatting to you guys. I really enjoyed the movie. And thanks so much to the both of you for coming on Half the Picture. I can't wait to see what you guys do next.
Thanks for having us on. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, man. See ya.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to my conversation with Zach Fenning and Tony Cook. Remember to like and subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And stay tuned for more exciting interviews and guests coming soon on Half the Picture.